ॐ भरताय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कृतितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्दधामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणी। विद्याविनयसम्पन्ने ब्राह्मणे कविहस्तिनि शुनिचार्वश्वपाके च पण्डिता समदर्शिनः विद्या विनय संपन्ने ब्राह्मणे कवि हस्तिनि शुनि च एव श्वपाके च पण्डिताः समदर्शिनः। Chakra introduces this verse saying, for those people whose ignorance has been destroyed by knowledge, those panditas, those wise people, how do they see the truth? Literally, katam tatvam pushyanti, how do they see the truth? So he says, vidya vinaya sampanne brahmane. In a brahmana, you know, in the caste system, there's the brahmanas, the kshatriyas, the vaishyas, the shudras, and the brahmanas. And the brahmana, who is sampanna, means they're endowed with it. In a brahmana, who is endowed with sampanna, who has both vidya, they have knowledge, and vinaya, and humility. So it's a way of saying they have purity of mind, and their devotion is to jnanam, to the karmakanda and to the uttarakanda, to the Vedas. And so that's their stance. So they have a certain humility and they enjoy knowledge, and they have a certain purity of mind because they're living, if a brahmana, taking a brahmana is at least an archetypal way, they're living a Vedic life committed to dharma and committed to the life that is instilled, the Vedic life, committed to the Vedic life. So, in the brahmana, who is endowed with knowledge, who has knowledge, and who has vinaya, that modesty, antakarana shuddhi, purity of mind, and gavi, as well as in a cow, hastini, in an elephant, shunicha, and in a dog, eva, and indeed in a dog, and shvapakecha, and in a dog eater. Shva is a dog, paka is one who eats. So in the brahmana who has this so much knowledge in antakarana shuddhi, and or in a cow, you know, in an elephant, in a dog, or even in a dog eater. So we've got the two ends, the brahmana and the dog eater. You know, because the dog eater, the chandala, is considered one of these people, you know, like an untouchable. A shwapaka chandala is like an untouchable, where the brahmana is somebody that you honor, you know, and put on to and consider as a holy person, you know, a pure person, somebody who's living a Vedic life. So we've got the shwapaka on the one end and the brahmana on the other, and then all of these different animals in the middle. Says the pandita, those people, the pandita here, the ones who have this knowledge, samadarshinaha, their vision, they have a samadarshinaha. Their vision is the same in all of these. In other words, sama means same, darshinaha, darshan means their vision. that the Panditaha, Namata Pearl, those Panditas are Samadarshinaha, one who have an equal vision. So you have to be careful here, because it's not as though this is kind of some neo type of Vedanta, some kind of strange carryover. It's not as though a dog becomes an elephant. You know? It's not that I see a dog as an elephant. And it's not that I see a dog eater as a brahmana. The duality, the diversity in the creation remains as it is. But I see the truth of the dog eater and the dog and the elephant, right? And the cow and the brahmana. I see the atma. I see these all as different manifestations. Ishwara. Everyone is equally Ishwara. Everyone has as their core the substance, as their substance, the one self. This is like when Swamiji tells the animal cracker story. You know the animal cracker story? Who's had animal crackers when you're little? Did you ever get those little boxes of animal graham crackers? That's animal crackers. We used to always pick through to find out which ones, you know, do you like the horse or the giraffe or the monkey or which, the elephant, which animal cracker do you like? You know, what are your favorite ones? So Swamiji always tells this animal cracker story where the mother is passing out, you know, this, the animal crackers, you remember this one? She's passing out. She's passing out to her children, and all the children's friends are all there, and she has the animal crackers, and the kids are all excited, and the one is saying, you know, I want the elephant, I want the elephant. And the other one says, I want the elephant too. No, I want the horse, I want the snake, I want the dog, I want the cat. And so they're all going, and some poor mother's trying to find all of these, and give, you know. And finally one says, no, can I have an elephant too? And she goes, oh, I'm sorry, honey, we're out of elephants. Would you like the tiger? No. I have to have the elephant too, you know. And so it goes on and on like this. So on one level, you know, on one level, the elephant is not the tiger, right? It really is not. The elephant is not the tiger. But the wise one sees the graham cracker. They're all graham crackers. They're all graham crackers. They're all identical in their graham crackerness, right? And that's our situation here. There is so much diversity. So much diversity, and the diversity is real on the level that it's real on. In other words, an elephant doesn't become a tiger, right? A chandala, a dog eater doesn't become a brahmana, a cow doesn't become a horse. And you can't expect the same things of a cow as you would expect from a horse, etc. You know, so that diversity is real within the level of Vyavahara. Even the level of your own imagination, there's diversity. And that diversity is real. There are different qualities, the sattva, rajas, and tamas, and all of the different manifestations and modifications and combinations of these three qualities. Sattva is the intelligence, the purity, that which so clearly reflects the self. It's anand, it's intelligence. Rajas is all the activity. And tamas is dullness and inertness. And so we can look at the manifestation of these qualities, sattva, rajas, and tamas, in the creation. And so it's not that the brahmana sees, the wise person sees, all of a sudden everything becomes sattva, or everything becomes tamas, or everything becomes rajas. The diversity is there. And the expectations brought about by that diversity, it's also there. You know, realistic expectations that are true to the thing as it is. That remains. But I also see every single thing equally in the creation as Ishwara. Every single thing equally as the self, as myself. Myself in this form, myself in this form, myself in this form. The diversity of forms remain the same. But the self of the forms, the truth of the forms, is only one. And that's what changes everything in a way, because everything becomes recognized as a manifestation of oneself. So another way of saying that is every single thing, this entire infinite creation, is a manifestation of myself, the self, the atma, not the self, the jiva. I could say that about my dream. I could say my dream. Every single thing in the dream is a manifestation of myself. Right? I could say it's a manifestation of my psyche. Right? It is me. And in fact, in psychology, we accept that, and when we analyze a dream or your imagination or just the way you see the world, we see all, particularly a dream, we look at every single aspect of the dream as an expression of yourself. Right? It's not somebody else, right? It's not an expression of somebody else. It's coming from you. In the same way, this whole creation, the entire infinite creation, is a manifestation of your being. It's Ishvara, you know? And so when you see it like that, this whole, there's nothing that is not you. Right? And there's nothing that is not you, that doesn't have you as its core, you as its very self. Another way of saying it, that there's nothing that is not Ishvara. Both ways are very powerful. Right? You are Ishvara, actually. Right? But say if you're participating in this creation, you can say, all of this is myself. Recognizing that the whole Maya Upadi, which is Ishvara, is an expression of the Atma, of Brahman. Or you can be talking just from within the creation and saying everything is Ishvara. Right? Absolutely everything I experience here is Ishvara. It's also nice to give that little added kick to it. Is everything is Ishvara, everything is myself. Yeah. That makes a difference. I think that it's powerful to think of it, the Ajnani, or even Jnani, Ajnani, doesn't matter. There is a Dehatma Buddhi. It can be a Dugdha Bija. It can be like a burnt seed, because you know that your Swarupa, your very nature, is not this physical body. Right? That's the Satyam Mithya. This body is dependent on me. My being is not dependent on this body. But my consciousness, the sat-chit, the wholeness of myself is totally pervasive to this body. So this body depends on me, I don't depend on it. That's the knowledge, right? That's the reality. But now, we can use this. We can use this. This body is made of how many parts? Big parts and little parts. There's, you know, the major organs, hearts, lungs, liver, etc. There's so many major organs. Eyes, sense organs, brain. And then there's all of the muscles, all of the bones, all of the blood vessels. There's a whole functioning community here. This is a very complex community made of so many parts. Are we set?
Okay.
Made of so many parts, okay? This community is made of so many parts. But we are the Bhagawan. We are the Ishvara of this community that's made of the body, right? This, I am the whole. I can say, I am the whole. All of the organs can be devatas. They can say, well, you know, I'm in charge of this. The liver's in charge of this. The lungs are in charge of this. The heart is in charge of this. This is my domain. They're all the devatas, right? But the Ishvara is the one who is this whole. Who has an identity with the whole. So now, if you think of it yourself as the Ishvara of this body, every part of this body is important to you. Right? Swamiji's used the example, have you ever had a hangnail? A hangnail is very irritating. Have you ever had just a little cold sore? Little hangnail, little pimple, little problem, little tiny physical problems, and then we can go to the greater things, of course, like a toothache or, you know. Every single part of the body is something that the rest of the body and that I, from my own drishti, from my own vantage point, care for. You know, as long as I'm a normal person. You know, I will care for it. If I get a cut, I will care for it. My finger is broken, I will care for it. My mind is upset, I will care for it. I will be concerned. I will be engaged in that. I'm engaged in the process of the whole, looking after the balance and the wholeness of the whole, the well-being of the whole. That's natural to you in reference to your body. Right? But so now, if that's the drishti in reference to your body, when you see, I am, you say I am this, what about when you gain a sensitivity to I am this? In other words, this is myself, this is myself, this is myself, this is myself, this is myself. There's a change in attitude. It brings about a change in attitude, you know. Even when one part of my body is ailing, I have to take care of my part, that part. When one part of my environment is ailing, I have to take care of that part. You know, we even do that. If I say now, one part of my body is ailing, is hurting, I will naturally go to take care of that. And we naturally, just as human beings, we extend that also. If one part of my family, my immediate family is ailing, I go to take care of that naturally. It's an extension of myself. If something in my home is ailing and needs attention, I go toward that to fix it. Right? So that type of care, care extends in a very natural way, not in a weird way. It's in a natural way, you know. There's when I see the nature of myself in every living creature, in everything in the universe, my response to it is tempered by that knowledge. Say it like that. Response to it is tempered by that knowledge. And so that's what he's saying here. So the Pandita has this Simadarshinaha toward everything. He just uses these four examples to contain all beings. Toward everything, no matter what you are, at the core, who you are is my being. There's not somebody else there. You know? It's very interesting because you have to be able to say that about the worst of the worst as well as the best of the best. The worst of the worst are as much an expression of Ishvara, of yourself, as the best of the best. All of those possibilities are there in the creation. And not only that, what is interesting is, at the core, the self of the worst of the worst is untouched. Just like the self of the most pure of the pure is untouched. Mm. Yeah? Mm. The self of the, I mean, this we so enjoy, the self of your dog or your cat, the self of your plant is your being. That is you. That's you. It's not anybody else. That's me. Right? There's no other me. Right? And so when you're looking into the eyes of your little animal, the one who is there is you. It's such a beautiful thing, really. But it's also true when you look in the eyes of a disturbed person. You know? The one who is there behind the disturbance, the mind is what's disturbed. Right? The mind which is insane or disturbed or whatever it happens to be. The one who is there illumining that mind is you, not somebody else. It's you. And that you is untouched by that disturbance. The disturbance, this is also something so helpful to understand because you really do... You know who a person is. You understand this. You know truly who a person is. You know who's there behind the eyes. You know who's there behind the mind, if I could say. Behind the eyes, behind the mind. The problem is the disturbed mind or the upset mind, the angry mind, that mind itself is producing pain. Right? Mind, so there's pain there. But the self that is illumining, the self of that pain, is untouched by the pain. The self of the pain is the self that's illuminating, the same self that is illuminating the mind that is enjoying joy. Say there's a mind in rage. The mind is having rage. There's another mind that is brokenhearted. Another mind that is, you know, having fun. Another mind that is in love. All of these variety of emotions are there. And some emotions are excruciatingly painful, and some emotions are so joyous. But the self that is there, the satyam, of all of those different minds, is only one being. Right? And so what will these different minds say about that one being for the Ajnani? The self, that the mind that is enraged, that enraged mind will then label its rage and say, I am enraged. And so it'll take the self, your being, that is present, the very conscious being that allows this rage experience to be known, and the mind itself will identify the self with it. I am enraged. And another on this end of the spectrum, this mind will say, I am having so much fun. I am so happy. Now this being over here has usurped the I also, but now in a positive way, identifying the same oneself now with this happy state. Right? And now, of course, the one that says, I am enraged, certainly can't be the one that says, I am happy. Right? Because the happy mind and the enraged mind are two different experiences that are not coexisting. Right? So how can this happy person be this sad person? Right? The happy person has to be the happy person is the sad person, is the angry person, is the enraged person, is the anxious person, is the in-love person. I have to be able to say, I am. Right? That's the satyam nitya. That's what I have. If I can recognize that truth in myself, if I can recognize in myself that there is a happy state has come, I'm experiencing the happy state. Now a sad state has come, I'm experiencing a sad state. An angry state has come, I'm experiencing the angry state. If I can recognize that in fact these states come and go and I remain the same, in other words, I don't come and go, I can recognize that. Then I can see, even in reference to my own mind, I'm not coming and going as these states are coming and going, and therefore I can't be them. Right? If an emotional state can come and go, and I remain the same, I'm the self of the, I'm the happy self, I'm the sad self, I'm the anxious self. Right? I can say like this: the one who is happy is now the one who is sad. Right? The one who is sad is now becoming agitated. Right? One thing replaces another, replaces another, replaces another. I remain the same. If I can understand that, then there's an asakta, there's a non-attachment, there's no relationship between me and those changing states. And if that's true for me, then what's to make it not true for me in reference to all different experiences, your experiences, your experiences, your experiences, your experiences, because I have no attachment even to my experiences. See what I mean? So that's the differentiation that's got to take place. When I understand that, then this whole world of experiences, right, exist in me. I'm the satyam of all of these experiences. And so then I can see the self, because look at it this way also. If I can say, I'm aware of all of these experiences, they come and go and I don't, you can also say exactly the same thing. You are aware of all of these experiences, they come and go, and I don't. Right? That means you're not your experiences, and I'm not my experiences. Right? There's no differentiation. There's no differentiation between you and me, because I'm not my experiences that are coming and going, and you're not your experiences that are coming and going. By not being the experiences, what I mean by that is, the experiences come and go, they're not away from me, but they don't own me. That's the satyam mitya. All of the experiences that I have certainly are not away from me because they all exist, they all enjoy consciousness. Every single experience I have, it exists, it enjoys consciousness. But the experiences come and go. Every experience comes and goes except for the existence consciousness. Right? Every mood I have comes and goes except for existence, my being, my consciousness. And that's true for everything, for every one of us. Everything comes and goes. It leaves. It is born and it goes, except for me, except for the existence consciousness. So what does that mean? For all of us, there is one reality, the existence consciousness. And that existence consciousness, my amness, which is consciousness, is not coming and going, nor is it objectified. You can't say, oh, look at the existence consciousness. You just are that. But there's not one of us who is not that. There's not one of us for whom this is not true, that everything comes and goes except for me. Right? But look at 10 people in the room say that. Everything comes and goes except for me. And who am I? This one existence consciousness, the existent being that I am. That is who I am. That is actually what is. The jnani, the pandita, the samadarshinaha, is the one who recognizes this sat-chit, that my own, the sat-chit that I am, as being the very stuff of all of the changing experiences. All of the changing experiences, all of the changing moods, all of the changing relationships, the whole Ishvara has for its reality the sat-chit, which is myself. That's the samadarshinaha. And so he says that in terms of cows and brahmanas and cows and elephants and dog eaters and dogs. That stands for the whole creation. So he goes on. Ihaiva tarjita saragaha. Ihaiva tarjita saragaha. Yesham samyestitam manaha. Yesham samyestitam manaha. Nirdosham hisamam brahma. Nirdosham hisamam brahma. Tasmat pramanite stitaha. Tasmat pramanite stitaha. Iha eva taihi jitaha sargaha yesham samye stitam manaha nirdosham hi samam brahma tasmat brahmani te stitaha. He says, here indeed, iha here, eva indeed, taijihi, taihi jittaha, tire that taihi jittaha, sargaha yesham. He says, sargaha, this creation, sarga means samsara, sarga means birth, and when they say sargaha, they're referring to the birth and death, the ongoing birth and death. So sarga has been used for samsara. This samsara, this world of change, this world of birth and death, here itself, jittaha is conquered by those people, taihi, by those people, by them. Okay, taihi, instrumental plural. So iha eva taihi jittaha, past passive participle, is conquered. Sargaha, this world itself, this samsara itself, is conquered by them. Yesham, for whom? Samye stitam manaha, for those people whose mind stitaha abides in samye. In samye means in Brahman, in samye, in that which is the same. Samye comes from sama, that which is the same. So this sarga, this world of birth and death, the samsara, is jittaha. It is totally conquered by those whose mind, manaha, stittam, abides, rests in, samye is locative singular, in that which is the same, in Brahman, in that which the sat-chit, which is the same. And so here, well, let's do the whole verse, then I'll go. He says, nirdosham hi samam brahma. That Brahman, which is samam, so samye, that Brahman is samam, is the same, and is nirdosham, without any defect, right? No punya papa, no raga dvesha, no ajnanam. There's no dosha in it. There's no defect. So that Brahman, which is sama. Sama means it's such it, sat, which is chit, which is limitless. There, it has no dvaita. There's no duality to Brahman. There's no right side of Brahman, no left side, no upside, no downside. The consciousness is consciousness, period. The consciousness which is existence is consciousness. It's not white consciousness or blue consciousness, you know, or thick consciousness and thin consciousness. It's consciousness. And it's not a consciousness that is spatial or non-spatial. It has nothing to do with that. It has nothing to do with duality. So it's just pure being. That's the samatvam, right? Samatvam means that there's not a big amount of it or a little amount of it, you know. It doesn't have anything to do with size. It has nothing to do with color. It has nothing to do with shape. It has nothing to do with time. It has nothing to do with change. if the very me that you are is total and complete in and of itself, having nothing to do with any type of duality at all. So that's the samatvam. Mm-hmm. And that samatvam is nirdosham. It doesn't have any doshas in it, doesn't have any defects in it. There's nothing to fear about it. It's not going to turn on you. Like, for instance, any sukha. Sukha means happiness or joy. Any sukha that you experience in the world is full of dosha. It's sadosha. It's not niradosha. It has dosha. It has defect. Like what? Well, one of the huge defect that any sukha has is that it has inherent in it dukkha, sorrow. Because any sukha within duality is time-bound. And that means that the sukha comes to an end, which itself is a dukkha. Sukha means, you know, it makes me happy. But that thing now, the sukha is superimposed onto the object, right? It makes me happy. At some point, this object is not going to make me happy, right? For many different reasons. It could be the object goes away, it breaks, it dies. Or it could be that I go away. I go away. It could be that I used to love the object. Now I no longer love the object, and the object is still here. Now, if it's an inert object, it's time for the garbage. It's time for the garage sale, right? But if it's a person, it becomes much more complicated. You know, the sukha dukkha, these sukhas, you know, in the Hastamalakya Bhasha. In the introduction, they say Shankara wrote the introduction for that. He says, you know, that sukha is inherent in all sukha, and not only that, it's inevitable. It's inevitably inherent. Dukkha is inevitably inherent. You know, it's the inevitable end of any sukha. That's a big dosha. That's a big dosha. and then say, even when the sukha is here and we're enjoying it, there's another dosha in that the mind now realizes that sukha that we're enjoying is finite, and so the dosha, the sukha has to be protected, which brings about fear, right? So our sukha, all of the sukha that we enjoy, if it hasn't already turned into dukkha, it has an underlying fear. If the sukha is born from the creation. So these are the types of doshas. Our simple existence is full of dosha. Because the existence is the existence which in fact is Brahman. In fact, in reality is Brahman. But this existence is superimposed on that which is subject to death. So being itself, because superimposed on that which is subject to change, right, is full of dosha. Brahman has no dosha. It's nirdosha. Why? Because samam, not subject to any change. If it's the sukha, the swarupa, the ananda, which is the Brahma swarupa, the nature of Brahman, is samam. It's not subject to time. It's not subject to change. It's not going to transform itself into dukkha, right? Mm. It's not going to lose its being. It's not going to go out of existence. It's not going to change its nature to become something else. And so this Brahman, being samam like this, it says, therefore, Brahmanite stataha, these people who have conquered samsara, they've conquered the samsara, because their mind is remaining in that which is the same, and that which is the same is Brahman. Okay? Therefore, it says very simply, Brahmani te stataha. Therefore, since that which is same is Brahman, therefore they stay there. Te means they. Te stataha, Brahmani. They stay there in Brahman. Means that the mind, this is so beautiful. This is all satya mitya, right? This whole problem of staying or not staying, this is all samsara. I mean, this all has to do with Ishwara's creation. It has to do with the jiva, who is an ajnani, until have becoming gaining knowledge. The jiva that gains knowledge now discovers satya mitya. Right? The satya mitya isn't something that is understood at all by an ajnani. Satya mitya is, this is really the whole, the truth of the whole thing. You know, that my being, the satya, my being, the Brahman that I am, is samam. It is stable. It is always the same. Nobody can do anything about that. The universe itself cannot do anything about that. My mind, had because of ajnanam, has not differentiated this satyam, that which is absolutely stable, from itself, which is mitya. The mind, the body, the sense organs, the creation is mitya. Coming into existence, going out of existence, every single part of it. Totally dependent for its being on this which is absolutely stable. The jnani's mind has recognized, has differentiated the satyam from the mitya. And it chooses to stay in the satyam. Right? Now, what's so interesting here, say I say, oh, you know, I think I'm just going to stay in the satyam. Okay? Now that I know there's a satyam, I think I'll just stay there. Okay? You know what is so interesting? Is that that's like the clay pot, the pot saying, you know, I think I'll just stay in the clay. Right? I'm just going to make that decision now. From this point on, I'm just going to stay in this clay. Yeah. Well, you know what? Initially, a decision like that has to be made, because for the mind, as ridiculous as it is, but for the mind, because of the habit, this is satyam. This mitya is what we see as satyam. You know? And so I have to keep bringing myself back to the sat-chit, which is the truth of this, the stability, the oneness that everything equally enjoys, that is my own being. But when the mind truly gets it, truly discovers this, it is always, has its foot in, so to speak, its being, the stability of its being, the stability of the mind is the satyam. The truth of the mind is the sat-chit, which the mind enjoys. Is there any part of your mind, any part of your experience, that is away from the conscious being that you are? Ever at any time? Never. Never at any time is any part of your mind, or your body, or your experience away from the conscious being that you are. The only problem is, from the standpoint of the mind, is that it hasn't recognized that. It has only recognized the conscious existence in relationship to the objects of experience. It's never recognized it as me, the changeless substrate reality, changeless satyam, that all experience that I have enjoys without any movement whatsoever. It is the samatvam, the stability of all experience. But once the mind has recognized that, then reveling in the reality of yourself, it experiences mitya. And why does it experience mitya? Because it can. Because the body, mind, sense organs are part of Ishwara's creation. Right? So this is all mitya. The body, the mind, the sense organs, the ahankara, and everything that is perceived, everything that is seen, the whole Ishwara, the whole manifest knowledge that we experience here, all mitya. And so mitya enjoys mitya. But for the jnani, right, so all the whole maya upadhi is mitya. And so as long as I have this body, mind, sense organs, I have all of these experiences within this manifest creation. And I have a body, I have a mind, I have sense organs, right? But I also, my mind knows what the whole thing, what's going on here. So it appreciates this body, appreciates the sense organs, appreciates the thoughts, appreciates the emotions, appreciates Ishwara. all the while resting in the satyam in the same way that the clay rests in the pot rests in the clay. Right? So always enjoying the changelessness of my being, my own swarupa, which is its own self-experience, then all of this life goes on.
Mm.
So resting, that's what they say. So here, the one who knows this, for that person there's no sarga. There is no birth, death. There is no change. Right? Because for me there's no change. When I drop this body, or when I go from waking dream to deep sleep, or drop this body, or even in this life itself have changing experiences, there is no change for me. And that is my aparokṣa-jñāna, that is my direct, immediate self-experience. Because I've recognized myself. I've recognized that, all of these things are changing and I'm not. It's not that I think. Knowledge isn't like this. It's not an indirect knowledge where you say, oh yes, all of these things are changing and they tell me that I don't change. That's not it. It's that all of these things, the totality of experience goes on changing and I don't. That, and I recognize that fact, that this me in fact never changes or wavers in any way. And what is a wonderful thing is to go ahead and have your sorrowful and agitated and angry experiences. And then recognize yourself there, in the middle of it. In the middle of it. That you're still exactly there, without being touched at all. And then at some point, as your vairagya develops, just in the life experience, and the life experience in the light of this knowledge, your mind stops engaging in the universe in a way that produces pain, because there's no reason to do that. Because the very swarupa, the very, very, very home of ananda, or any happiness you've ever enjoyed, is your own being, so the mind just stays home. And then appreciates Ishvara and lives out the prarabdha. That's the state of the jnani. So, let's do this next one. He says more about this. Very simple, very simple. Na prahrishet priyam prapya. Na prahrishet priyam prapya. No dvijet prapya cha priyam. No dvijet prapya cha priyam. Stira buddhira sammudaha. Stira buddhira sammudaha. Brahmavid brahmanisthitaha. Brahmavid brahmanisthitaha. Says, na prahrishyet priyam prapya. Na udvijet prapya cha apriyam. Stira buddhihi asammudaha. Brahmavit brahmani stitaha. Okay. He says, na prakrishet priyam prapya. We're talking now about a brahmavit, just for the first line. Having obtained something pleasurable, right? Priyam means something that is beloved or makes you happy, is pleasurable, is dear. Priyam is that which is dear to you. So prapya, indeclinable past participle. Having gained something that is priyam, that is dear, na prahrishet, that person, the brahmavit, doesn't become elated. Na prahrishet, doesn't become elated. Then, nor na udbhujet prapya cha apriyam. Nor having gained something which is apriyam, not dear, something that is painful, that is hard, that causes pain. This is sukha and dukkha, priyam, apriyam. Okay? That person, that brahmavid, does not become despondent or agitated. Right? So gaining something very dear, the person does not become elated, and gaining something that is apriyam, not dear, doesn't become dejected. So we're looking at extremes. Doesn't become elated, doesn't become dejected. And what does he say? Who doesn't? Stira buddhihi asammudaha brahmavit Brahmani Stitaha. The Brahmavit, the one who knows Brahman, right? Brahmavit. One who knows Brahman, who is asamuddha, and knowing Brahman, is asamuddha, no longer deluded. No longer deluded means I don't now superimpose my ananda on the object. You know? I need this to be happy. That superimposition isn't there anymore. That delusion where I think that my wholeness, my fullness belongs to the creation, exists in the creation, and I have to run after it. So that samudha, that is asamudha, that type of delusion that can... Mudha means delusion. Delusion? Samudha. Complete delusion. Samyak mudha means thoroughly deluded. Okay? The person is no longer, you know, thoroughly deluded like this. So that person not enjoying this thorough delusion that the samsari enjoys. The ajnani is not partially deluded. The ajnani, the one who doesn't have self-knowledge, is thoroughly deluded. You either know or you don't know, right? You know or you don't know. If you don't know, then you are this body, mind, sense organs, and your ananda has to be your limited being, you know, and you have to do something to become whole and complete. You're either thoroughly deluded or you're not deluded. That doesn't mean, just to make this clear, a person who is thoroughly deluded can still have different degrees of ananda. For instance, if you a thoroughly deluded person can lead can be a brahmana by guna, living a very sattvic life, very dharmic life, and that person living that type of a life will have a certain amount of stability and ananda and peace, saintliness, cheerfulness. Or say another person is living a very adharmic life, just very pleasure-oriented, seeking just raga, dvesha, all the likes, fulfilling likes and dislikes. That person, thoroughly deluded, you know, is having a lot of pain. But both are thoroughly deluded, right? I'm not less deluded just because I'm living a saintly life in terms of self-knowledge. Unless I have assimilated my experience more to realize if I live a dharmic life, you know, and I put dharma before pleasure, I've learned that that gives me a greater peace. I have shraddha in Bhagavan. That gives me a greater peace. All of these things are wonderful. But I'm still a samsari. I still take myself to be a jiva. I can still be doing all kinds of rituals all day long in order to get the swargaloka, you know, because the jivatvam is there. That's the sammuddha. So the sammuddha, when we say deluded, you can think, well, that's a negative word. Like, what if I were to say to a person, you know, walking around just in life, oh my God, you're one of the deluded people. You are a deluded person. That's very condescending, you know, to say you're a deluded person. This type of delusion, this type of sammuddha, this is not a condescending statement, because if you're making a condescending statement, then you have to be making it toward every human being in the creation. It's not condescending. It is the reality that until that jnanam is there, until the jnanam is there, we are suffering from delusion. We are taking to think that it is an absolute total delusion when I take myself to be this body subject to birth and death. Now, that's not a partial delusion. Either I am this body or I'm not. Right? I'm not partly this body. If I'm not this body and I take myself to be this body, that's a total delusion. If I'm not my mind and I take myself to be the mind, it's not partial delusion, it's total delusion. Right? If I take myself to be subject to birth and death and I'm not, total delusion. If I take my ananda or happiness to be something that exists in an object, total delusion, not partial delusion. It's only partial delusion if it partially exists in the object. Or if it kind of exists in the object. Or I'm kind of limited. Or I'm kind of this body, but that isn't the situation. And so when we say this sammudaha, it is not a derogatory statement. It's a statement of fact of the human condition. And that is the human condition until that delusion is removed. And the delusion is removed by jnanam. Now, instead of delusion, we could say confusion.
Not loaded.
But it's still loaded, because what if I say, you're just really a confused person? I could say it, it's all right, you're just confused.
No, I don't like that either. Yeah.
It's not much better than saying, you're deluded. You're confused, you're deluded. So you take it how you want to. But I'm saying, this isn't something derogatory, it's a statement. It's a statement of fact. And with this delusion, we suffer, right? And this delusion is samyak mudaha. It's a total delusion, right? And this total delusion, can go. And it goes by knowledge, through knowledge. And so they say the Brahmavid, the one who knows Brahman, right? And who has sthira buddhihi. You know Brahman, and sthira buddhihi means the mind is the one that gains this knowledge, the buddhi. Right? The Atma is Brahman. The Atma doesn't have to gain knowledge of Brahman. The Atma is Brahman. You are Brahman. It's the mind that has this samyak mudaha, that's the mind that's suffering. This mind needs to gain knowledge and become a Brahmavid so that that delusion is removed. But the delusion has to be removed thoroughly. And then the buddhi, your knowledge, is sthira. It is steady. It is firm. It means that there's no more doubt. So you can say, well, I'm Brahman, but, Swamiji's always make fun. Here you go. Yeah, go like this, making fun of us. Swamiji, because Swamiji, I know that I'm fullness. I know that I'm fullness, Swamiji. But still, my mind, Swamiji, my mind is still, But I know, Swamiji. So you go on and on like this. That's the lack of that sthira buddhi. Sthira, Because in fact, you need to recognize your ananda in the midst of your mind. The mind, the body, the creation has nothing to do, does not touch the wholeness of yourself in any way. So there's no this but my mind. You should say like this: I am fullness, I'm working on my mind, it's got some problems. That's fine. My mind, still gets into it has habits, it gets into these problems, that problems, I'm working on it. I'm fine. You have to be able to say that. I'm fine. I am whole. I'm complete. My house is dirty. I'm cleaning it. My car needs to be washed. You can say the same thing about your body. You can say the same thing about your mind. You can say the same thing about unconscious complexes. These are things that, need some care. This is Vyavahara. You know what Vyavahara means? This is Ishwara's reality. This is transactional reality. This is the reality that we live in. I have certain duties that I have to do those things. As long as I have prarabdha, I've got a body, I've got mind, I've got a sense organs. These things need to be taken care of. I need to take care of my plants, and so we have penny for that. these things, all of these things, we have so many responsibilities, so many things that require our care. That's all Ishwara, that's all Vyavahara. So many things about the body, they require some care. So many things about the mind, or habits that I'm still working on, they require some care. Why? Because they can cause pain. If the body, you don't take care of it, it causes pain. If you don't take care of your plants and your home, they die. All these things that we do, we take care of these things. You know, if there's something I need to work on, you know, in my personality or in my, you know, in my different reactions and these things, they need to be worked on. Because I want to, because I want a clean house. Inside and outside, I want to clean the house so that my mind, you know, is relaxed. So I need some help to relax. But that's not me. I'm fine. I need to recognize that, the satya mitya. And then you can do all of this house cleaning that you want. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's fine, and it's natural to do it also. It's just like if your body, if you have a cut, as a great jnani, you're going not, hopefully you're not going to say, I'm a great jnani, so just let it bleed. No. You know, if you break your arm, you're going to say, I have knowledge, let my arm stay broken. Who's going to say that? It's ridiculous, right? It's ridiculous. The arm is in pain, and so you fix it. You have a cut, and so you put some medicine on it. You have some disease, you take care of it in the best way that you can. It's what we do. It's a normal. It is normal. But that doesn't mean I'm not fine. That doesn't mean I'm not me. That doesn't mean that Brahman is not Brahman. And it is exactly the same with the mind. We gain this knowledge, a poor mind has had beginningless lifetimes of hell. Beginningless lifetimes of samsara. Really. And so it takes a while for it to unwind. It takes care. It takes a while. You know, we have to water it and tend it and care for it. You know, to help it to unwind in the light of this knowledge. And this knowledge, really, it's like the beautiful sunlight and water and nurturing all together, this knowledge. But we have to care for it like that. That's fine. That's normal, is to care for the mind and help it to grow and to mature in the light of this knowledge that I have now. That's sthira buddhi. You can have a sthira buddhi, means a very, very firm in your knowledge and be tending your mind, tending your body, tending your house, tending your environment, right? Because they need care, whatever care they need. The mind needs care, the plants need care, the rug needs care. My family needs care. That's it. But it's not, but Swamiji, you know, I really know that I'm such it, but you know, my mind. You have to say it differently, and it's all right. Okay? You see what I mean? You just say it differently. You have to think about it differently. And then no problem. So he says, sthira buddhihi asammudaha brahmavid. And the brahmavid doesn't become elated in happy times and sad and depressed in when you get some apriyam. Why? Because brahmani sthitaha, because the home base for that mind is Brahman, is the satyam. And that satyam is not elated and it's not depressed. It is ananda, the swarup ananda. We say ananda. This is another, you know, thing that we have to drive home over and over again. The ananda of myself, of my being, is not the sukha and the sukha opposed to dukkha that we experience in the world. The ananda of yourself is so much more than that, but it is its own definition. It's the definition of swarup ananda, the ananda, the wholeness that is you, that is the nature of your being. You need to discover for yourself what that is, because it's not a joy that comes and goes in the mind. It's not bliss that comes and goes in the mind. Right? Bliss, joy, happiness, compassion, all of these are emotions. These are things, these are mental states that come and go. Ananda, the swarup ananda of yourself, is that wholeness, that love, that being, that is never comes and goes. That's your very self. And so a good meditation is when you're just sitting in the morning, just say, you know, and you just relax and say, okay, what is that ananda? What are they talking about? Because it's not something that's away from you. something that's here right now. What do they mean by the word ananda? Not a joy state that comes and goes. Something that is here now. Right now. Right now, right now. Not covered by some ajnanam, as though ajnanam is a paper bag of some sort. Ajnanam is not a paper bag that's put over the self. It's a misconception. It's something that causes ignorance. It causes superposition. But it's not covering you. It's just causing you to take you to be different than what you are. It's causing the mind to take you to be the body. It's not covering you like a bag. It's causing you, your mind to take you to be this body. But when you recognize that you are not the body, the same you that the mind had thought was the body is the you that you realize is not the body. So that you is not at all being covered, it's just being mistaken because of ajnanam. And it's this very you that is ananda. So what is ananda about it? That's a wonderful thing to discover. And then you recognize that is never not there. And it's incomparable to any type of sukha and dukkha that's coming and going. That's what has to be recognized. And the mind, that what he says, is saying here, one who knows that, the Brahma, the Brahmani Stitta, is just abiding there like the pots abiding in the clay. So there's no, the mind will never, just like the pot, can never scamper away from the clay. The mind can never get away from the ananda, which is you. Never. There is nowhere the mind can go that is not you. And that you is ananda. So no matter what the mood, what the emotion, what the vritti, what the experience, the self of that experience, that ananda, is there as much as the clay is there for the pot. So that's what one needs to discover. Okay, why don't we stop there. 3 verses. Om Purnamidah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.